Hello and welcome to another episode of Psyche of Sales. I think people are getting sick of me saying this is a pretty special one, but we have Scott Gibson, CEO of Pragma, dialing in from South Africa. Scott, welcome.
Hi, Johnny. Good to see you. Nice to see that you've got some warm weather in ours as well, same as us, moving into summer, which is cool.
Yeah, 100%. In fact, as you can see, I'm sitting at north of Oka, one of my favourite parts of the world, by the beach, but doesn't matter if we're on holidays. If we book things in the diary, the show must go on. And I couldn't think of anything better than sitting down and having a chat to you about sales at the moment. So if there are any interruptions, it's Lottie and Isla that will be jumping in at some point, might be saying hi. But I know what you're like and you'll be okay with that. But we might start, Scott, by a couple of things. Like, one is, should it sort of talk to that you've worked with our EMEA partners before, SAI, so Paolo, Brian and Kyle, which is how we were introduced. You're a client of Enable IQ as well, but I think more than that, you've got a really hefty experience in sales management, and now CEO of a business which is really focused on that. So do you mind giving us a 30-second snapshot of you and your background?
Yeah, so Johnny, Paolo and I used to be partners at one stage in our careers, and we worked together on a business called Branchhouse, which was the software division of Dimension Data, now NTT Data. And so I ran that for a long period of time. We largely sold SAP. That was our biggest software product that we were resellers of. We were one of the biggest in South Africa. And then I took some time off after that, did some private equity investing, angel investing of my own. And then Pragma kind of appeared on my radar. They were looking for a CEO. The founder, Andrian, was retiring, and it's a 34-year-old business that I felt just needed a slightly different approach, perhaps, and maybe someone fresh. So it's largely an engineering business focused on the EAM space, enterprise asset maintenance or management space, with a whole bunch of consultants. We can outsource engineers to our clients as well. And then we have a really cool piece of software called OnKey. And I guess that was largely why I was approached, because of my background in the software game. I haven't written a lot of code in my life. I'm a chartered accountant by profession, but they seem to think that, I kind of understand some of the terminology that software guys throw at you every now and then.
Yep.
And yeah, around how do we grow it internationally? And I think that, before you and I got on this call, I was telling you about my recent trip to Europe. And it's interesting how a small little South Africa or medium-sized South African company is punching above its weight and competing with some of the big players in the international space like SAP, Ultimo, and Maximo. So it's a really cool company, and I'm excited to be there.
And I think it's fair to say, I think we've probably known each other now for maybe 5 months. 6 months, something along those lines. We've been working with the team probably.
So you guys came on some day one.
Yes, that's right. We did come on very, very quickly. And it was one of the things I think that you rarely see is someone who comes on as a CEO who just said, I know we need to work on sales. Here's our focus. And you found a solution and acted immediately. Whereas I think a lot of people sit back for a period of time. And I'm not suggesting that's the wrong response, but I had someone ask me recently, they said, oh, we've got 8 of our team here at the moment. We've got 2 more we're looking to hire. Do you think we should wait 6 months before we start doing anything about the 8, or should we wait the 6 months? And I said, are they all performing at a high level? No. So why would you wait a second? Why would you give it a moment? So maybe tell me a bit about that sort of thinking.
Yeah, so when I came on board, I guess there were a couple of areas where I realized we needed to make some change. And one was we had a slightly heavy cost structure, and I've had to make some unfortunate changes there. But it's never a pleasant process, especially when we're a people business. So unfortunately, to take out costs, you're going to have to take out some people at some costs, and we've done that already. So that was a parallel stream, I guess, that I was running in conjunction as well with the sales stream. When we looked at the sales force, which is only about 15 people, I could immediately see that if there were one or two individuals that were doing well and meeting their targets, and there was another, a mid-tier that were halfway to 60% of their targets, and then there was a lower layer that just were not getting close. And so your immediate response is to go, oh, hang on, let's completely change the sales team, you know, get rid of the low performers and try and replace them with somebody better. But then I get in conversation with you guys and with Paolo and them, I thought, well, hang on, rather than go through that process of having to almost, you know, refurbish the team completely, which comes with its own risks.
Yes.
In that you've got to now train these people into how to understand your product and your solution. I thought, well, let's give these guys another go, you know, and looking around at the team, I felt that they all have the absolute competence to sell, but that they were just missing that edge.
Yep.
You know, that, and I felt as well from my experience of my first interactions with Primo was we had this, and maybe it's a 34-year legacy of being proud, very proud of who Primer is and what we do.
Yep.
We used to dive into meetings and stop talking about us.
Yep.
And I was like, hang on, guys, let's take a step back. How do we talk about, and let's understand what our customers want.
Yep.
And how do we then matrix our solutions and offerings into what they're trying to achieve rather than the other way around? And we just had this bombastic approach. We're so brilliant. We're very good. And I think that's a lot of what you guys are also helping us with and what your platform's helping us with. And I don't know. The feedback I'm getting from the team is that they're really enjoying it. I had one of the guys come to me the other day. We were about to enter into a meeting with a customer where the customer had raised a concern about some exclusivity and pricing.
Yeah.
And Barney said to me, well, we need to go through an objection handling approach. And I was like, hang on, where did he learn that from? And
yeah.
I realized that it's always from his Enable IQ stuff. So it's good, but now they're putting it into practice, and so far so good. Like you say, 6 months in, but I think we're making some progress.
I'll give you some feedback on that. Before I do, though, this idea of, you know, getting rid of the lower performers or even some of the mid performers and starting again, I think what's interesting is that very few organizations take responsibility for where their people are at. Because you sort of ask, someone recently said to me, yeah, this leader and she's just not a manager. She doesn't know what she's doing. She gets too involved in here and so on. I said, great. So, yeah, where did you get her from? Oh, she was in operations prior and we moved her into management. I said, great. So what development and training did you offer her and coaching throughout that process? Well, we haven't offered her any of those things. So tell me about the direction that you've offered her. Have you been really clear about what you're reporting against and what the milestones and what she's achieving? Well, no, we haven't been through that process. Well, tell me about how you manage her every single week. Oh, we kind of leave it to her and ask her to send us a report every single month. You're saying, and you think she's the problem. Like, she's not the problem. I mean, you've just taken someone from operations, put them into a very senior sales lead position with no direction, no training, no coaching, and then thinking the issue is her. And I think this idea of, and I love that you've done this, and it's certainly behind my belief, is let's give everyone the chance to succeed. Let's give everyone the tools. And then if you're a low performer and you're doing nothing about investing in yourself to get better, then the answer is really simple. But if you're a low performer and you're working hard at becoming a high performer, because we're not talking about the 100-meter sprint here. Like, anyone can work in sales within reason. It's not as though you need a fast twitch muscle and so on. And so it is that idea of, I think you should be really proud and I've certainly seen it as a real strength to be able to invest in your people as a whole, rather than, you know, it's so easy to cut and run and try and replace. But I actually think that's a longer term prospect than trying to work with the group that you've got.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think as you take the easy approach of just firing your sales team, and I'm not sure you understand the long-term consequences of a decision like that. And that, again, to my earlier point, then you've got to retrain someone.
Yep.
And you might just end up going through the same cycle. So I didn't feel as well personally that I knew the sales team well enough to make that call. And I guess maybe as well the process we're going with you guys is buying me some time.
Yep.
But I'm hoping that it's buying me some time to the point where, like what you just said, you know, if someone is still a low performer after going through this process, then you know what? Then I guess we put in the effort with that person, and if they have to leave, then it's inevitable.
Yep.
But I'm not seeing it, by the way. I mean, yep. I'm actually seeing some improvements already. So I'm hopeful that that this decision is going to pay out for us, and we're not going to have to replace those people with new employees that we have to train.
Yep.
And we'll hopefully complement the team with new skill set that we need going forward. And we're going to make sure as well, by the way, that if anyone comes in new to the team, they've got to get on the program so that they're also properly equipped to sell working for us.
And so the first couple of months we worked together, we did a capability assessment, and we sort of really did the prep and the launch. And the last, I think it's 10 weeks, we've had access to the platform and we've been running those fortnightly check-ins. I've personally noticed, and I know the SAI guys as well, have noticed some real shifts from session one, and then session two was really quite exciting and eye-opening. And then session three, there was a bit of logistics and, you know, complaining aspect. And now then four, again, just moved on a really long way forward. And we've noticed some shifts. And I thought, rather than kind of lead the witness, so to speak, what have you recognized in the team shifted over the past 10 weeks or so?
Thank you. Look, there's also a couple of other parallel processes that I'm running, right? So I think what I also needed to do was I needed to put some excitement in the team. So and something else that I carried over from my Dimension Data days is we used to have this Windows of the Week competition.
Yep.
So like, you know, that's around orders. So you've got to, while you're also training people and giving them the skills, we still got to pay the bills. So we're still selling every week, right? So I injected that into the team. So they have this win of the week when they win a really nice, the winning deal of the week wins a nice bottle of wine.
South African wine?
South African wine.
Beautiful.
The guys probably come and collect it from my office on a Monday because we a duty claimed on a Friday afternoon.
Okay.
We then also had win of the month. We've got a league table running on those deals, and then we're gonna have win of the year, which potentially could be a trip to Paolo's house in Mauritius.
Is there any way I can sort of chaperone this trip?
Yeah, to come along for that.
Yeah.
So I think, notwithstanding the email or light quick process, I think there's a couple of other initiatives that have injected some more enthusiasm in the team. But I think then alongside that, the fact that I've done that, the team are also seeing that, Scott's also trying to add some excitement and competitiveness.
Yeah.
He's also kind of helping us or injected this other process to just improve me as a person.
Yep.
And even as they leave Pragma, hopefully they're going to leave as a better salesperson going forward. And so I think when people see as well that you as a company are investing in them and investing in them on their career and guidance and advancement, I think that creates this level of excitement. So I think what you've observed is probably a collection of a number of things in the team, I think. Look, the other interesting thing is I feel that the economy is in our favor right now.
Okay.
So the South African economy has been through a bit of a doldrum. We've had some political change here, and it seems that the markets are a little bit more buoyant and there's a bit of a tailwind. So that also helps, right?
I mean, yeah.
We're seeing clients start to spend money again. So I think it's a combination of factors. I think the enable IP process has given these guys a framework.
Yep.
And the team a framework. Sorry, when I say guys, I'm talking about guys and girls, right? We have a nice mixture. But it's given us a framework around which to have conversations. And then our weekly check-ins are really good. And as I was saying to you earlier, it's really cool to hear some of the vocabulary that we're using now in those sessions, but also in other meetings and preparing for meetings, preparing for client conversations.
Yep.
This idea that you and I were talking about of sort of, let's not just think about what we sell, let's understand how we can align ourselves to our customer strategy. I think the team are really thinking that now, which is great to see. We've still got a long way to go, as you know, Johnny. We're not done. This is not a short-term project with you. So
yep.
We've just started our financial year on 1 October. So we're also in the process of setting new targets and getting all of that in place. But and I think all of this will line up, and that is an important process.
So a couple of things come to mind. I think number one, the most obvious, is that clearly you're a chartered accountant background, because if you're a true sales background, that bottle of wine wouldn't exist on Monday if you were adjudicating on a Friday afternoon. But in all seriousness, I learned sales in a direct sales environment. So it was commission only in people's homes, and a lot of people struggled to get out of that environment. And I saw that you have to change when you move to a corporate environment. But there is still a lot there that I learned. And they used to have this saying, which was rank recognition prizes money, right? So people, you know, performed for a bunch of reasons. But one of them was rank, that, you know, people to go from an associate to a director or to a manager and things like this. It's important to a lot of people. Recognition's critical, because I think sometimes in the corporate world, we just look at it as here's your job title and here's your bonus at the end of the year and your pay packet. And this idea of recognition and being really clear what you're being recognized for, and things like win of the week, as simple and fundamental as it is, it's really clear. I need to make sales to be, you know, part of win of the week. And the ironic thing is, if you're making loads of sales, you can afford a bottle of wine anytime you want. But being handed that, being gifted that, and winning that and earning it has a different feel. And so that's the recognition piece. And I once was running a door knocking crew, and we used to have this piece of paper, and it was split into into these squares. So I don't know if you can see that, but something like that. And it was like a bingo form. And in each of the squares, there was something you had to achieve. And so it could be sell to someone with an odd house number, sell to someone with an S in their name, generate 20 leads in a day. It was just all these things that we knew that if someone did multiple of these, they're going to have a really good week. And if you got three in a row across crossways or horizontal, you got a CD. Right? This is how long ago it was. And if you got on the way down, you got a bottle of grog, right? And one of them was you had to make three sales in a night. And they used to get paid on average about $350 a sale. This is 20 odd years ago. See, this person sold three in a night, generated some leads, did this, and he won a bottle of grog. And he was so excited. He'd missed the fact that he'd made $1,050 as a 22-year-old in one night, you know, which today is probably worth $3,000 or $4,000 in a night. Like, we're talking a lot of money, but it didn't cross his mind, because in his brain it was just, I've done a vertical line and I've won this bottle of grog. And I think sometimes we lose sight of these little things. And I've got to pick this up, because if my team listens to this, I made a commitment that when we win a certain, you know, number of deals, that there was an iPad that they were going to get. It's been brought up multiple times, and, you know, they've had a bonus in this time and things like, but the iPad is such a focus, right? And you got to get this.
Yeah.
So then there's the idea of prizes, which is the next bit, right? And it's a bonus. People love to win. And then obviously there's a financial reward that people like from it, but it's and that's critical, don't get me wrong. But I think it's not just one thing. And I really took that from what you just spoke to then. And I want to make it really clear that we never think we're the solution with our clients. We're not there every day. We are a tool that people can use that we believe helps leaders and teams drive best practice throughout it. But the one thing we notice from fortnight to fortnight to fortnight in these sessions is the first time we asked questions from people, no one really asked, no one really responded. The second time, there was sort of 10, 15 minutes of discussion where we didn't have to step in. We didn't have to, like, it was just then someone else would take over. The third time, they were talking about how they used it in live scenarios, right? The fourth time, it was how they overcame and they were helping each other through this process. And you're starting to think that slowly, with everything being put into place, the culture's changing. And I say slowly, it's not slowly, it's 10 weeks since this sort of process has all started. And for those that aren't comfortable with their culture or think that there could be a shift as an opportunity, I think just to know that consistently putting key things in place will equal a shift in a pretty reasonable period of time.
That's it. I think it's around trusting the process as well, you know, and that's something that I talk about a lot. And I think our team has understood that well. I think also what you've highlighted as well, you know, in your process with our guys is is to listen maybe a little bit more to clients, you know, and I think that's helped us. I was saying to you before we started recording this that, you know, I think you often believe your own BS and don't really understand how to sell your solution, or you believe you'll beat your own BS, and then that's the mindset you follow when you go in. But I think if you listen to your clients a little bit closer and understand how they use your service, all of a sudden I think it'll change. I mean, for me, this recent trip that I've just done to Europe, I was telling you about, and we went to visit some clients in Sweden, and they were telling us how they use our product and platform to sell more, right? Not save more. Yeah, which has actually probably been our traditional business. We're in the business of trying to help our clients better maintain their assets. So you would assume that means that we're trying to save their money. In this case, we're actually servicing a client that is looking to increase their post-sale service that they sell to their clients who buy their machinery and maintain their machinery, and they want to sell more parts and service. And they use our platform, our software, to quantify the value, the market size of that, and to run the process of selling after parts and services and building up maintenance plans. And I hadn't really understood that until I went and had that conversation with a client.
Yeah.
I kind of walked there went there thinking, oh, we had to save you money. But actually the client turned around and said, no, you're not here to save us money. You're here to help us build our market. And I'd much rather, by the way, be selling to a client that wants me to be part of his process to build his market than be selling to a client that's trying to save money.
Yep.
It just feels like you're more aligned. So, you know, I think the process of listening to clients and understanding what their requirements are and why they use you rather than you tell them why they should use you. It's something as well that I think our sales team are slowly learning in this process, and I'm learning.
It's such a good point. I know we had a chat before we got started, and I said that when I was in the security industry and selling digital surveillance, that everyone was very technical, and they'd always sell that statistics say you're losing this much in theft and staff theft and so on, and then we can save you 20%. But when I ran the numbers, I had a spreadsheet that I worked in, which was that how much 20% was against their revenue. Just get a little bit of echo there. But how much 20% was against their revenue. So then knowing that their costs are fixed, it would then minus the cost of the software that we had and the cameras and so on, and then what their profit would look like off the back of it, and then what the ROI would look like off there, and then what they could do with the money. And we'd have discussions around, if you had an extra $400,000 a year, what would you do with it? Yeah, some would say, I'd do my renovation on my house, I'd play more golf, I'd buy a new car. Others would say, well, we'd probably go and open a second store. And so my competitors are talking about saving money, and I'm having conversations around opening a second and a third and a fourth store. Like, it's pretty easy to work out who's going to win, you know, in this deal. And if you look at, I'm a big, you know, personal investor of education, and I listen to a lot of podcasts, and one of my favorites is the Airbnb example, and we're talking a company I've probably used twice in my life. It's not like I'm not a big user of them either, maybe three times. But I love that they talk about that their business made a shift when they called up all of the customers who were their biggest users and asked them why. And before that, they'd all asked all the people who weren't using them, and they were people who probably hadn't got the concept yet. When they went to invest, people didn't understand, you know, I think the 100 people they spoke to from an investment perspective was all like, you want people to stay in a stranger's home. Why would you do that? But they just didn't get it. But the people that did, they wanted to know why. And they really leveraged that piece, and it helped them really drive it. And I think that's it's what we preach in sales, is that just first start understanding. The rest of it will sort itself out. And the other one was Coinbase. And Coinbase, the crypto, you know, wallet that you use, it was a small part of their offering when they first opened. And it was actually, they're going broke, it's not working. And then they called the people who use them the most, and they said, oh, we really love that we can use it as a wallet and then go and trade when we need to, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's what they became. They just tripled down, quadrupled down in that space. And I think that I love what you're seeing, and you're seeing live examples and live wins now, where people are actually asking questions. Why do you use us? What works? Or why would you? What's the goals of the organization? How do we help you do that? And it's a very attractive conversation to have when you're building together towards something, as opposed to, yeah, it sounds really tough and we can make it less tough from there. Yeah. And I think the other thing that you talked about just really quickly is the economy shifting. And I think sometimes we're so quick to blame the economy on the downside, but not also acknowledge it on the upside. And it does. There are times where, you know, to the real estate agents, friends of mine and clients that have said, you know, I'm writing $3 million now. You know, 5 years ago, I was writing two, and I'm saying, yeah, but the market doubled. You're actually, you know, you're 50% behind growth where you should be. You know, you should be 2 million up, not 1 million up. You know, the economy should, you should be able to work with it up and down. And so I think that's a really good acknowledgement. Where to from here?
I think you need to, as a salesperson as well, you need to learn to pivot. You know, with us as well, as I said, you know, economy is likely that our economy is seeing some tailwinds now. But there's also some verticals or areas for us that are seeing, you know, more of a shift than others. And I think sometimes as well, as a salesperson, you kind of get stuck in the rut of learning to sell to a specific customer type. That you've got to be careful that, you know, sometimes you're just barking down the wrong tree and you're hitting your head against a wall. Think about pivoting. You know, for us, the mining world, in fact, even within mining in South Africa, the specific commodities like platinum has been going through, you know, a poor demand process right now with electric cars and all kinds of stuff. So there's been a downshift there, but now gold, for some reason, has been flying. So,
yeah.
You know, even within that category. So I think as a salesperson as well, you've got to learn how to pivot and figure out where there is going to be more buying demand for your product and service, and where can you latch on to what they're trying to achieve from a growth perspective. So it's, and that's also a skill that I think salespeople have to understand.
And I really love that. And I think that our philosophy of situational selling, but this idea that it's what's in front of you rather than following a methodology. You know, at this point now, oh, so am I at the implication point now, or am I challenging right now? No, you're in a conversation, you're being really present, and based on what they've said is how you should shift and adapt and pivot. And I think that's it's a good point. And you've got to do that strategically as an organization, but I think individually when you're in front of a customer, is ask questions. And you said something, whether it was on this podcast or whether we talked about it prior, but you feel like your team are listening more now. And I think that's a really big piece. It's we often talk about we're asking more questions, but are they actually listening more? And it sounds to me, and that's a really good bit of feedback, is they are certainly talking to what their clients are saying, how they're saying it, and what they're looking for. And I think that's a really good sign.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that also comes from, you know, one of the modules we've done with you already is the phone and video-based selling. And because unfortunately, that's the world we've lived in now, right?
So, yes.
And I think a lot of the techniques that you bring out in your modules there helps with that, right? Which is, you know, even just talking about you. I've done some of your course, by the way.
Yes.
Because I said I wanted to make sure I understood it as well. I also want to turn myself into a better salesperson. But, you know, around tone and speed of speech, and I think that also teaches you to listen.
Yeah.
And creates space for the client to say something. You know, don't just go off on a monotone speech telling them what it is you do. Create those periods where you pause and you give the clients an opportunity to say something on a call with. I think we're learning a lot from that, and perhaps we all used to do it naturally, but even for me, seeing it and varying it in your modules has made me all more aware of it too. So when I'm sitting on these calls, I'm kind of like, what did Johnny say?
You probably listen to him in your mind.
I think I'm in way too many people's heads, but I certainly do appreciate it. And I think that, well, just hearing you talk, and I think if you're open to it, and maybe I shouldn't be putting you on the spot as a very valued client, but I almost want to know if we could do this again in 2 months' time, like prior to Christmas or something, and actually check in to see how it's going. Because again, we are a small part of what you're doing. We're providing the fundamental skill, underlying skill in some of the processes. You're doing the embedding, the application, you're putting those recognition prizes, the strategies and all those things in place. That's got, you know, we're not involved in that. And I want to make that clear that there's no claiming that we're doing anything beyond the space that we are. But I think it would be really great to check in a couple of months if you're open to it and just see how the team is progressing, because I think there's probably a lot of leaders or CEOs that'll listen to this and they'll think to themselves, I'm in a position where I've got some underperformers and some mid-performers and top performers. Am I doing enough? Like I had a group recently that we put a proposal forward and you can tell I'm on holidays at a holiday house. I normally type notes, but I found the kids' paper and pencils here, so I'm taking notes as we talk. But they talked about how the team needs to relearn how to sell again. They've been very successful. They've had some real upheaval in their business and their product line, and they need to relearn to go back to it. I've recommended they jump on the platform, and they said, no, our team only likes face-to-face training. And so we've done some more face-to-face, and I've gone back to them again and said they need to go on the platform. They don't like online learning. And I said, your team needs to get out of this idea that they only do what they like. They're highly paid. They need to relearn what they're doing, and they need the discipline. And that's what I think your team's done really well, is they've just had that discipline of, I just need to go in every week because someone is going to call me to account. Because very rarely in the world is there someone measuring the amount of minutes that I've spent in personal development, which we do, but I'm also going to get called out in 2 weeks' time. And so I have to put the time in to do it. And I've actually said to them that you don't need to do it just from a skill. You need to do it because you need your team to be humble enough and disciplined enough to invest in getting better every single week. And pay me as much money as you like. Face-to-face training will not do that in the same way. It's given to you in face-to-face almost, whereas I think your team is to go and work, you know, like you would at the gym preparing for a sport. There's an element of you got to work to get better. And I think that your team should be proud of the effort they've put in because they've put in a lot.
But Johnny, I also think, and I need to check in that I've sent this with my team, that I have heard one or two of them say that they've gone back to your modules again in preparation for a meeting or to double check on something. So yeah, I think you would lose that, right, in a face-to-face process. I think having an online and platform like yours gives the team the opportunity to go back and refine something that maybe they... You know, they maybe skimmed over it, or if you were in a face-to-face meeting, you got distracted by your phone and you weren't listening properly. You know, they know it's there, so then they go back and they look at it again. And maybe they had a meeting with a client and it didn't go so well. And then they go, hang on, let me just go back to that. You know, I remember something in the Enable IQ platform, let me go back and look at it again. And look, I've certainly heard one or two of them say to me that they've gone back.
We
feedback meetings, I'm sure we've had that.
Yes, you certainly have. And we've actually got a lot of people who do, to the point where we change the points tally to you get points in the gamification for going back over. And I had someone recently say that they want for their business no one to get rewarded a second time and a third time. Can we change it? And I've said, you're trying to change the overall philosophy of our belief, which is that to become an expert questioner, you don't watch 6 videos and do 6 workbooks and become great at it. You go back over and over. Like, we don't think this is a 12-month program with clients. We think it's over many years. You may not have the same level of intensity over that period of time, but you should. You're preparing for a meeting again. Go back into pre-meeting prep. You've got a major pitch. You should be going into pitching and running that process. But these are the things, and we had a major client do a very, very big pitch, and it's worth, I can't say because it came out, but it's as big as anything that we've ever worked on. And they invested a lot of money and time into myself to consult throughout this process. They now have access to the platform as well. What they're realizing, and they've said it's the best pitch and most professional experience they've ever had in their lives. From the moment the client walked into their office tower to the people greeting them there, to the moment they left and were walked out, that every minute was accounted for. All 12 people knew how to interact. Like, they were very intense in there. But nothing we did is not sitting there in that platform, because not every deal is worth that tens of hundreds of millions of dollars. But tell me that's still not worth putting a version of that in for something that's worth a million or two or three. And I think that's the piece that we're trying to get people. It's we use this terminology. We just want sales to be treated as a profession. And as a profession, you've got to invest in that. Like as a lawyer, you need to be doing continuous learning. As a doctor, you need to be doing continual learning. Like tell me that the South African rugby team doesn't continue to work even though they don't continue to. It was my own voice saying, do I really want to give them more credit? But imagine Khaleesi sitting with the team and saying, we're playing Australia. I don't think we need to put in too much effort this week. Let's just take it easy. We're already really good. You know what he's saying to his team. Don't take it lightly. We need to work harder this week. It's almost that level of avoiding complacency. I want to shift to this and a lot of very senior leaders and sales leaders now have that background like you. Sometimes it's engineering, sometimes it's actuarial or chartered accountants. And these are some observations that I might use this as our finisher, is that I've noticed that you're very quick to make decisions, but you're also really open to pivot, right? So you'll back your decisions. You hold people to account, including us. So we made a mistake once in pricing and you noticed it, picked us up, and were really direct. You weren't rude about it, but you just said, get on board.
Yeah.
But also you're really commercial and pragmatic in your decision-making. Tell me how much of that is innate, how much of it is your background in that, and how much of it is something you've intentionally got to learn?
It's a good question, Johnny. I think, obviously, I guess my background is commercial, right? And so before I moved into leadership or management role, I was the financial manager of a large listed London Stock Exchange business, right? So I had to figure out how to be commercial, and I guess my financial background helps me with that. And potentially that's why I picked up the pricing anomaly when we had that conversation, because I guess it's natural.
Yeah.
But I think my decision making is probably, that's just innate. I look at, when I say innate, I mean, it's not as if, I've been in a corporate world now for nearly 30 years, I guess, so probably longer. And so I guess there's some natural decisions that you can make without having to get too analytical about them. There's a couple of things that your gut just says, right, this is the right thing to do.
Yep.
And I guess to some extent, my gut was the one telling me that we needed to get you guys involved in helping improve the sales team. I could have probably sat down and said, well, let's do an analysis and let's go into the last 18 months or 2 years of history of each person's sales and track record and see, who really has had some peaks and troughs and who could potentially make it. But I didn't feel like I needed to do that. It felt natural that this team was good. I'd met them all, individually prior to me making this call. I got the sense that they were all ambitious in their own personal, space. And so I guess it was a gut feeling kind of decision. And I think, one of the things I learned early on in my career when I first started at Dimension Data, which was what my boss told me, he said, the only thing worse than a bad decision is no decision at all.
Yeah.
And, so for me, I'd rather rag. I made the call, right? We said, right, we're gonna put you guys in. We're going to not get rid of the sales team. We're not going to have performance of people out. That's the process we follow. And at the end of the day, I'm accountable for that decision. So I guess that's the other part of it, right? If you know that you're accountable and that you're the one that's going to take the heat if you made the wrong decision, then it's probably easier to make the decision. Right, and I guess I'm fortunate that I'm in that position. Did that answer your question?
It answers it perfectly. And I think there's this, I'll do a couple of quick summaries and then let you get back to your day, because I know you've got a big afternoon with your family. And I've got two kids who have been phenomenal. They haven't come out once, which is worrying me more than had they come out, I think.
What's going on?
That's right. A couple of things that sort of come from it is you said something about potentially training people and then moving on somewhere else, right, and taking the skills with them. And, it's that old saying of what happens if I train my people and they leave and work for a competitor? And what if I don't train them and they stay? And I think that's the piece there, right, is that we don't want underperformers staying with our business, but we can't keep blaming them if we haven't given them the tools to be better. I love that idea of also, and I've been taught this as well, that back your gut, because you might be wrong sometimes, but at least you know that you've backed it, like you've come in. And I shouldn't use the word gut, because your gut comes from experience, it comes from data, it comes from a number of things, but I think you do need to make a decision versus no decision. And then when I was saying backing yourself, the president of Cisco, I listened to a podcast that he said, I believe in diversity of thought. I have diverse people there. I believe in challenging, including challenging me as the president. And we'll have big discussions and we'll have, you know, robust discussions around decisions that we make until we've made the decision. He said, and then get on board or get out.
And move
on. Right? Yeah. And I think that's it's a really big thing, is that you back it, you see it, you follow it through until evidence comes up that suggests it's the wrong one and you need to pivot. But I think that's it's a really good thought, is that be commercial, don't not make decisions. And actually, this is what I'm seeing in the economy at the moment. It's not that we've seen no loss to competitors. We've seen indecision get in the way. And that's why we believe as a company like ours, the big thing we need to do is get better at educating that doing nothing isn't the answer. I'm okay with someone to say, we actually don't see value and don't think it's going to get better. What I'm not comfortable with is, we're going to focus in Feb. We're going to do this in April next year. Hang on a second. Didn't we just agree that we're going this way and we need to go this way and this will help us get there? And so we need to get better at that. And it's certainly something that I've seen as a bit of a shift. If you're okay with it, Scott, I'd love to do this part two in a couple of months. We'll do it sort of prior to Christmas. And I think it'd be great. Whether we do it online or in Paolo's apartment in Mauritius, we'll have to work out. But we'll have to work that out. But I can't tell you how much I really am grateful that you put this much time aside, because whilst we've spent 45 minutes on it, I've also taken, you know, 20 minutes as well of your time prior and getting things ready. So I appreciate you being so open to doing it. Is there any final thoughts that you wanted to share?
Johnny, I think just to say, you know, we appreciate what you're helping us with, and yeah, this is a partnership, right? You're not a supplier of ours. I see you as a partner, and obviously it helps that Paolo and I are ex-partners in many ways. So it's been great working with you guys, and I think the team share my view. Yep. I'd love you to ask them that too, by the way. And we'd love to give you feedback, and hopefully we're a success story that you can, you know, we can talk about doubling our revenue as a business after we worked with a neighbor like you. That'll be a cool story for all of us.
It'll be a very, very cool story. And if that's the case, I will come over and we'll do this in person. I've got some homework. I'm going to ask the team what they like about it, what they're using, and what we need to do better. So I'll pass that back to you in the next couple of weeks. But good luck this afternoon with your son. Sounds exciting. And I will I'll see you on Monday morning your time, Monday night my time, for our next check-in session.
Yeah, I'm not going to be on that one, Tony. I'm in the US next week, but the team will be there. So
the travel continues. Well, I'll make sure they all stay. It could be a good chance to ask them some questions.
Exactly.
Yeah. See you, Scott. Really appreciate it.
See you. Bye. Thanks, Tony.